Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode features Mark Ainsworth, CEO at California-based Lowell Farms. This episode was recorded over the phone on July 15th, 2021.
You know, we're a few months into the acquisition of Lowell Herbco, and we've been focused on putting our best quality product into the brand. We have our own farm, which is different for the brand. In the past, they had spent most of their time sourcing from farms around the state, and we have a phenomenal farm up in the Salinas Valley. We got a great grow team. Guys have been growing for 30 years and a whole bunch of them that are super passionate about genetics, and we just found that the marriage of our two companies together was just perfect. You know, they needed supply chain, we had it. The brand is phenomenal. We believe it's going to be one of America's great cannabis brands, and we're just focused on putting super great quality flower in the Lowell brand. And that's kind of where we've been focused.
Well, and you've originally worked for several Fortune 500 style companies, you know, in the traditional market industries, obviously. What made you want to make the leap into the cannabis industry in the first place?
You know, I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit. I have a bakery manufacturing background, hospitality, Ritz-Carlton, was a pastry chef for them. And my much younger days. So believe in quality. And when we got approached to start this endeavor 7 years ago, the landscape was much different here in California. You saw a lot of, product in Ziploc bags with a Dymo label printed on there. So, you know, we started it. It was a medical market. You could definitely see there wasn't a lot of, food safety in mind. So thinking about people with compromised immune systems and then, probably food products that weren't great for them to consume because they weren't produced with, shelf stability in mind or testing or a lot of R&D in the background. So, for me, it was really about trying to help push, an industry that had been around for a long time, but hadn't had a lot of support, but was to try to help build, best in class manufacturing operations. And, my background has always been operations and scaling. So, I really, really looked at that as a great challenge to kind of come in and help set a gold standard in California, like edible manufacturing in general.
So when you're looking at the California cannabis market as a transition from the 215 days now into the Proposition 64 days, obviously it's a completely different market. You had talked about, sticking, buds into bottles and things like that. The dram bottle days are over and now transition into a true CPG category industry. Are you surprised at the speed in which it happened, or, did you think it would happen faster than it did?
No, I mean, listen, we always joked and we say like 1 month is like 6 months here in California. I mean, everybody's, going as fast as they can to build infrastructure and get their brands on the shelf and start to win consumer loyalty. And, we've always known it was going quick. I mean, we've been on this ride here in California for 7 years. So, we've seen things change quickly overnight, going in from, even in the right when we went to rec and phase 1, phase 2 testing. I mean, it was just overnight, all of the changes, and our team has always done a great job really trying to stay ahead of what's coming down the pipeline. So are we surprised? No. What are we focused on right now? We're focused on really starting to we're still in this pandemic, we're starting to get out now and starting to engage consumers a little bit more, budtenders. So our next 6 months as an organization is really going to be focused on some grassroots efforts just to continue to get our products in people's hands. Now that, we're sourcing a lot of the flower from our own farm, and, we went from Lowell smoke packs that were, a little bit lower potency, and now everything is up in the 20s. So, we've definitely increased the quality since the acquisition. And you know, it's been great. The feedback from all the bud tenders and all the retailers, it's just been phenomenal on the improved quality and consistency.
Well, and when you're producing your own products, you know, growing definitely isn't an easy job. Breeding is definitely not an easy job. When you're deciding what you actually want to produce and bring to market, can you talk a little bit about your research and development process for your growing facilities and what finally makes it into the consumer's hands?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that makes us kind of you know, a very deadly team of cannabis professionals is our level of communication. We actually just finished a 2-day kind of leadership alignment thing with our whole management team, just to make sure we're all on the same page and ready for the next phase of our growth. So, you know, oddly enough, we all are you know, uber passionate about communication. So like we do, you know, I don't know any people, a lot of companies that have a culture like we have. Our farm every Friday, our growers, you know, we call plant health, and they basically go room by room at all of our cultivation locations, and they tell us what's going on with the plants. What are they liking? What aren't they liking, if we have any issues? And, you know, it's actually our growers have the whole C-suite, you know, salespeople, everybody's involved in it. So they get a platform to tell us what they're trying in genetics, how the genetics are responding to the microclimates in the greenhouses. So, you know, we're a really, really close knit group, and we communicate a lot, and it really resonates all the way down to the sales team on the street, and, you know, what new genetics are coming out, what are we trying, where do we think it's going to go? So, you know, we're a very communicative group, and we're always looking, you know, 2, 3, 6 months ahead of where we need to be with our genetics.
Well, and when you're looking at product diversification and product category diversification, are you looking to expand your current offerings beyond what you currently have now, or are you looking to really focus on the current product line and make it the best that it can be?
You know, our product team has a lot of irons in the fire, and, you know, honestly, we're going to put our best foot forward no matter what category we go into. You know, we've definitely found a home in the pre-roll category, and we have a lot of new innovation coming out there over the next couple quarters. We're really going to be focused on that. You know, we do have a great cultivation app, you know, asset, and, you know, phenomenal grow team that's just been knocking it out of the park. I mean, our farm's numbers are up, the quality's up, potency's up. So, you know, we're super excited about where that's going. So we'll be focused on, you know, pre-rolls, jarred eighth. And obviously, when you have great quality biomass like that, coupled with, you know, our extraction team, we've got a hell of an extractor who just his life has been passionate about extracting, and he's just been doing phenomenal stuff with the all the fresh frozen that's coming from the farm and the live rosin, and, you know, the hash infusions that are going into some of the enhanced pre-rolls. Like we're super pleased with the quality, and I think ultimately for us, it's I think this quarter it's about getting the menu stable, getting it right, making sure that we have ample supply chain for all the retailers, because we've more than doubled the doors since the February merger, and it just, you know, the sales team just keeps opening more and more distribution points every week. So, you know, we're super pleased with how everybody has embraced the marriage of these two companies, and how the increased quality has really resonated with the bud tenders and consumers.
Well, and it's not just the quality of the bud, because you have to get the bud into the hands of the consumer. And you guys' branding is top-notch. It always has been. Looking at what you guys offer and looking at your type of branding, it's kind of this rustic Californian look, you know, that whole mountain town kind of vibe. What went into the, I mean, obviously this is pre-acquisition, but like what went into the impetus behind that branding and deciding, this is the method that I want to use to be able to drive the brand?
Yeah, you know, I think, the original founders did a phenomenal job just making the cannabis cool, the packaging looks cool. Like it's definitely something that no matter what group of setting you're in and you throw that low pre-roll pack on the table, even if you don't or do consume cannabis, you're going to grab that box just to take a look at it, right? Because it's just super sexy. It's beautiful, you know? So, you know, they did a phenomenal job, and the design team has always, you know, really, really understood the aesthetics and where to go with it. So, you know, it really, you know, you when you think about these two companies, when they got put together, they did a phenomenal job on the branding and the story and the message. You know, in our company, we built incredible infrastructure. So, you know, you take our distribution division of the company, and you know, we're in every market 5 days a week. You know, we definitely cover a lot of ground, especially with our sales force. I mean, we have 15 reps calling on all the different territories, and you know, we have a huge presence in dispensaries. So, you know, once we were able to get this brand under our umbrella, you know, we right away went to work, you know, getting the message out there, and it's been great. You know, the whole team, you know, both Legacy and our team, when we put everybody together, it definitely, everybody saw the value of us all coming together and really pushing this brand to where we all believe it could be and should be.
And I'm curious about beyond just the branding, but the way that you guys display both your bud and your concentrates to the consumer. So if you take a look at, say, the flower side, you guys do more of an experiential approach, right? It's Zen or it's relaxing flower on the indica or sativa side. When you do your concentrates, you do actual strain diversification. And I'm curious what the thought process is behind, you know, doing experience with the flower, but sticking with strains for the concentrates, and if you plan to go full on one side or the other.
You know, I think, you know, the blending has always been the story of the low pre-roll, and it's people really have resonated to that. We will do, you know, listen, we just had great success with a product called, you know, we did a small origin collection. It did phenomenal, sold out in like a couple days. And it was basically paying homage to a lot of small farmers around the state. Even though we have our own farm, you know, one of the things that Lowell has been, you know, part of its ethos has been to support small farmers, and we'll continue to do that. And, you know, so, you know, it's really about putting, you know, the best quality of a farm or our farm forward. And, you know, we'll probably start doing some, a little bit of, you know, pre-rolls with single strain, focusing on that. We'll never go away from the blends because that's really what we've become known for. But, you know, some consumers do like the fact that they, you know, they love, you know, our OG blueberry, or whatever, you know, so it's like, you know, we want to give them what they want. People do love the blends.
Yeah. I'm curious. Do you consume yourself at all?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't, you know.
What's your favorite way to consume in right now? If you have a strain that you prefer, or even if you don't, if you have a terpene profile you prefer, what would that be?
You know, I'm an indica guy, so like we had a chill blend that just came out, and that was pretty good. That was like I think it tested out at 24%, and I've been smoking those. I like our pre-rolls. But you know, honestly, a lot of our extracted products that are coming out now, live resin, you know, I got a, I do try our extracted concentrates. And I think the live resin, products are just phenomenal. And then the most current round of vape pens that, have been made up in our facility here in Salinas, they've really, really dialed in that production of that live resin vape pen. So the cold press, it's just super, the flavor in it is phenomenal.
Oh yeah. I remember when you guys first, I think it was what, 2019 when you first released that cold press live resin pen. I mean, you're right. It's phenomenal. And the construction quality is actually really, really good considering, you know, it's a disposable, it's a one-time use.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, you know, everything that we put into the brand, whether it's not, you know, you go look at our greenhouses that are grown flower for the brand, they're immaculate. You know, there's nothing on the floor. I mean, our team is super disciplined. They, you know, they love the plant so much that they're so disciplined in every aspect of the work that they do. So even you take it from how they trim the plants to how they keep the canopy, to how we dry the plant, to how we, you know, to how we package it. Like there's a lot of thought. You know, there's about 400 employees or 400 families, as I like to refer to the business, that come in every day to really try to create, you know, a great product for consumers. And, you know, and it's, you know, it's not lip service. I mean, literally the culture and the place is how do we respect the plant and how do we do the best that we can to give it to consumers? Because, you know, we know we're in a market right now where everybody is fighting for consumer loyalty. And, you know, the only way that we think that we can do is that every division stays focused on their best disciplines and doing things the right way.
When you're looking at the totality of the industry, are there particular markets that you're not in that you would really like to expand into? I mean, especially considering now that the East Coast, the upper Northeast is starting to open up.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, we'll be in, we'll be launching with Ascend Wellness, you know, I think next month in Illinois, and we'll also be in Massachusetts shortly after. So we have two big market rollouts that are coming up, and the team is working on that. I know we had a lot of assets head out that way, and our team's been out there training them on how to do the Lowell smoke the way we do it. So we're excited to see those markets open up soon. You know, honestly, we've always been focused on California. You know, it's just such a juggernaut. It's, you know, five or six markets itself within the state. So, you know, we've been focused on building an engine to, you know, to really service and do well. I don't want to say win, but, you know, to really just make sure that we're doing our best and that the machine is firing all cylinders here before we go crazy everywhere else. But I think if we can focus on, you know, building and servicing California right, that when, you know, who knows when the federal state lines will finally collapse and we'll be able to go across state lines. But I think, you know, we're prepared and preparing to be able to do that.
Well, and here in the California market, a lot of things have been happening. Most recently, it would be the BCC and the other agencies merging into the Department of Cannabis Regulation. As an operator here in the Golden State, how has the BCC evolved, in your opinion, now into the Department of Cannabis Regulation? And have they taken a good step forward? Do you see this as getting a better market to be in?
You know, we've always, because we're a manufacturer, we deal with CDTFA, BCC, CDPH. So, you know, because we have, you know, this vertical, except for retail, I mean, we interact with a lot of the state agencies. You know, I would say that they've always been great to us. We've always had a great relationship. You know, in the early days, it's always been about, you know, I think they had their priorities right. It was about growing a lasting industry. And they came, I wouldn't say from a position of enforcement, but more of a position of, you know, we have to learn how to do this, compliantly and everybody. And unless somebody had nefarious dealings, they didn't really, it was more about corrective actions and how do you get better and how do we get better. So, you know, they touring our facilities and seeing our commitment to total continuous improvement and our tech stack. I mean, we've always had a great relationship. I think, you know, depending on the leadership and how they do roll this up, I think it's going to be a great thing for the industry. I know licensure has been a little slow because they've just been so overwhelmed. But, you know, listen, they, you know, when there's emergencies, they do move quickly to, you know, to help folks that are in business to really try to, you know, keep the ball rolling. Right.
Right. And well, you know, as an operator, let's say you had just a magic paintbrush and you could create into law the regulations or at least a BCC structure that you would like to see into place. Is there something that you would like to see them really take a look at, you know, coming from the standpoint as an operator?
Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, honestly, the taxes are the taxes, but who collects them and how they get collected has been a pain point for us at times. So, we at times, if we've had retailers in the past that hadn't paid their bills to us, but we've had to pay the taxes on their behalf, it would eat up our working capital. So, you know, hopefully one day those things will be either they'll be able to support us with, like the ABC does, if someone doesn't pay their bills, they are able to, you know, put their licensure in jeopardy if they don't pay their bills. So I think there's a lot of distributors or manufacturers that at times have accounts receivable based on, you know, dispensaries paying or not paying timely. So, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get some support in the near future with that, or, you know, I don't want to say, collect the tax from the retailers. I don't want to put that out there, but, you know, there just definitely needs to be some support. I mean, at the end of the day, if the businesses are stressed and, you know, they can't grow, it's not going to be a sustainable industry long-term, you know, where the state will have tax income. So, you know, I think, listen, I mean, I know other states have gotten it really wrong. You know, California is definitely a state where, you know, we have a lot of rules and regulations, but I think there's been a lot of openness to, oh yeah, that probably didn't make sense. We need to fix that. So, you know, we're only a couple of years into this. You know, it's still a nascent industry and everybody's trying to do their best to find a way to, you know, to build, you know, healthy, successful companies. And that's kind of what we're focused on too.
And you mentioned banking, or I'm sorry, taxes being a serious issue. You know, 280E obviously affects the industry as a whole, regardless of what state you're in as a cannabis operator. You know, Chuck Schumer unveiled his federal legalization hopeful bill today. Personally, I don't necessarily think it's much of a chance, but do you think that there's a possibility of maybe taxation at the federal level for cannabis operators, maybe a 280E reform for legal cannabis businesses, or maybe like the Safe Banking Act finally making it through?
I mean, it's going to happen. You know, how soon, I don't know. But, you know, I mean, we all learn how to manage cash and how to be safe with cash. And, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you know, it's, you know, they're high value targets when you have a lot of cash around. And, you know, we're very fortunate that we've never had any major incidents and haven't had any employees in jeopardy by moving some to cash. And, you know, we have good protocols and, you know, armored vehicles and so on and so forth. So, you know, you just get smart and you don't be reckless. And, you know, when the hair on the back of your neck stands up, if it's above and beyond, you know, an SOP that's documented versus on levels of movement of cash and product, then, you know, then we pause and pump the brakes and we say, okay, you know, we need to take a look at this. So we know something is going to happen, but until it does, we're going to continue to be, you know, as fiscally responsible or safe with all of our assets when we move them around the state.
Do you anticipate maybe if the federal government does not take this necessary step, do you see maybe the state of California coming in to do some type of localized banking reform?
You know, they've talked about it, and there are a lot of, you know, credit unions that are helping out. I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, listen, you know, we want to be an employer of choice and cannabis in California. And, you know, from the benefits packets to the 401k contribution, you know, we want our employees to be able to get mortgages on homes. And, you know, at times, you know, we have entities that, you know, aren't cannabis named that they work for. So it helps them. But, you know, there's a lot of maneuvering and jousting that, you know, that we have to do to make sure that our employees can, you know, keep a roof over their head and, you know, get their paychecks into their bank accounts, so on and so forth. It's been a lot better in the last, you know, 2 years, but I would say, you know, 7 years ago, it was, you know, it was interesting.
Well, if you had to like kind of map out the next 1, 3, and 5 years for Lowell Farms, what would it look like?
You know, I would say in the next year, we're going to continue to, you know, open doors and engage consumers in California on a rapid pace. We're really focused on, you know, I guess our current position is we want to build a great American cannabis brand. So, you know, we will be finding partners in other states to engage and work with them to get the Lowell Smokes in those markets. 3 years, we're working on a lot of innovation on driving the cost of a pre-roll pack down. You know, one of the challenges our chairman gave us was to try to find a price parity and jar dates and pre-rolls. So, you know, right now, you know, an eighth of flower in a pre-roll is much more expensive than an eighth of flower, you know, in a jar. So how do we, you know, optimize through, automation or so on and so forth to really be able to get the cost out of it so that we can have a price parity. So that's something that we're focused on in the innovation side. And then how do we scale, you know, high potent pre-rolls? Because, you know, the more you agitate the product, the more potency you lose. So our team has really been focused on figuring out how to get that right. And we've seen great strides and success. So I think we'll see that. And then, you know, 5 years, you know, hopefully we're in a lot more states and, you know, who knows if we'll ever take this thing international, you know.
We would like to thank Mark for his time and being on today's episode. And find out more about Lowell Farms by visiting them online at www.lowellfarms.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.